I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. Want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
Herbert, Verdell behind him. Snap, give it to Verdell, up the middle. Touchdown! Verdell, right up the middle, untouched! Oregon has beaten Washington! The Ducks have beaten the Huskies!
This is Dirt and Sprague.
Cole turns down the rubber, now a 2-1. Swing and a high fly ball towards the left field corner. Gonzalez towards the line, and that one's off the monster. In to score, Bogarts. Pierce on his heels. Here comes Devers. Bradley's into second. Jackie Bradley Jr. clears the bases. Red Sox by a run. Boston on top, 5-4.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
Snap and play. Swing the right leg. Kick left into the uprights. Right down the middle. A game winner for Gostkowski. And the Patriots prevail 43-40.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
All right, it is 12:02 in the Rose City. It is time for Dirt and Sprague on Portland Sports Leader 1080 The Fan. Brandon Sprague, Andy Dirt Johnson. We are live in one of my best friend's broom closet basement storage facilities where I used to make out with ladies. Today we're making the studio sexy.
Oh, that was a loud drop. These sounds were all off.
That dirtgasm in my ear was screaming loud.
Like, nobody deserves a dirtgasm that loud.
I think because we're making our station that much better for the next day or two.
Sure, we'll see. That's to be determined. We'll see how this thing looks on the other side.
Well, the on-air product we're not going to promise is going to improve, but the behind the scenes technical support stuff should be substantially better. So today we're kind of nestled in this room, and I got to be honest with you, to paint a picture to you listeners out there, because you can't see us obviously, I haven't been in a room this small literally since I won Spin the Bottle.
Yeah, this is about it, right? This is the only thing that's missing is that the lights are on. If we turn the lights off, all sorts of weird stuff could go down in here.
If Dirt leans over about 6 inches, he might be able to kiss me.
Yeah, we're Eskimo kissing the entire show. Now, we did do
A-Rod in the mirror.
If we are exactly just looking at each
other. My chest is against his chest, and we're like, let's talk sports.
We're gonna do bicep curls during the commercial break. Now, we did do a show kind of like this. Remember when we went to Nebraska 2 years ago?
Right, that's right.
We had to do it. So we did a show at an Omaha station. We like live fed it back into Portland.
Right.
And on that Friday, we did the show. And it was a pretty tiny studio, and we were sitting like next to each. It's like when you're
right
at the
left.
It's like when you're at the bar and you're the person to your left, and you got to look your other way the entire time. You're not facing each other. It was kind of a weird interaction back and forth. But we've done shows in small studios before.
It reminded me of the bar one's a good example, but it almost is when you're doing a show. I think it's strange to do a show next to each other versus across from each other.
Yes, it is.
So it more felt like I was booth restaurant date guy where both people sit on the same side.
Which you never do.
Have you ever done that?
I've never done it because I won't allow it to happen.
That's one of my top 10 pet peeves.
You don't know. You never in any circumstance sit
don't get
next
a booth.
To, yes,
go
exactly.
Sit at the bar then. Yeah. If you're going to sit that way and that's what you want to do, you don't get a booth.
It's just awkward for everybody.
Right.
And then how do you eat? You're on the same side of the thing. You can't look each other in the eye. It's just, I'm with you completely on that one. And we, whenever I go out to dinner with the fiance, that's always an option. And I always make sure, no. We're sitting across from each other. We're making eye contact here.
Does she try to sit next to you?
No, because I don't even leave the door open.
Right.
Like I wait for her to sit down and then I sit down on the other side.
It was, I had one moment with the wife. We were on a date before we got married, and it was one of those awkward, we both kind of went into the same side for a second. And before I even sat down, she literally looked at me and goes, "What the hell are you doing?
What are you getting?"
And I said,
there.
"Yeah, I'm not this guy. I promise, I'm not that guy.
Sorry, my bad."
But you know what? We're still rocking. We're gonna have a good show today. We have a lot to discuss on today's radio program. I actually want to start here, not to get too serious, but
okay.
I kind of want to just start. I watched that game twice. I watched Oregon Washington live, and then I rewatched it yesterday morning because I woke up far too early.
I watched it 492 times.
I bet there was Johnson's hand lotion next to you as well.
There's a few happy tissues.
So my observation remained the same, and I said this on the postgame show. We can break down one matchup, another matchup, one player, another player, officiating. We can break down a lot from that game. What I walk away from is this. The thing that stuck out the most was Mario Cristobal and the program. And in this regard, this is a tweet from Jeff Schwartz, former Oregon offensive lineman. He does media work now. He's been on the station several times.
Hey, we've had Jeff Schwartz on the show before.
He's a good guy. He is a tweeting fool during Oregon games. And he tweeted this. And I thought in the moment, oh, yeah, I kind of see where he's coming from. And then at the end of the game, I think the tweet makes no sense and actually looks bad. And I'll read the tweet for you. He said, and this was early in the game, I thought after the bye week, Oregon would have done, would have had some new wrinkles in the offense. They haven't shown any yet. And I didn't follow on social media quite as closely as maybe other people. I just wanted to watch the game, be locked in, take down my own notes and my own thoughts. But I saw that tweet. And as I'm watching, I go, yeah, he's right. There's no wrinkles. Washington does that reverse pass with sure. Browning. You know what they did, though? Oregon didn't change a damn thing. Oregon had their play, and they had their attitude, and they had their approach, and they didn't care. They didn't care what you thought. They didn't care what I thought. They didn't care what the fan at the top row thought. They were not going to deviate away from what their ultimate goal was in that game. And it was to show Washington and the entire country, this ain't Oregon of 2010. Not that that's a bad thing, because you sure. went to the title game. This is a different Oregon program. This is a new foundation that they have established. And they went against the most physical team in this conference, and they showed America that, look, toe for toe, we're with you. And in a lot of regards, Dirt, I thought they were the better team on both sides of the ball in the trenches. And so even with fans that were upset in the game, in the moment, why aren't you allowing Herbert to do this? Why don't you run a trick play? Why are we just running the ball?
Yeah.
Mario Cristobal and Marcus Arroyo never gave it a second thought. This is who we are, and this is what we are going to do.
I think you hit it on the head, because that was in the moment of the game. I stayed off my phone too. I forgot my phone charger, so I didn't want it to die. So I just figured out, what the hell, it's probably best that I keep my phone in my pocket the entire game. So I didn't tweet at all until the very end. And that was kind of the whispers that were going on the sideline, is why is it so conservative? Why are you not taking shots down the field? Why are you not allowing Justin Herbert to run around and make plays and be the talented quarterback that we know that he is? And I think that is, there's a lot of positives when you beat a rival. There's a lot of positives when you win a game like that. And the Oregon fan base right now is on cloud nine, and we'll see how long it lasts, because they got a tough one coming up this weekend in Pullman. But if I told you Friday, in the last segment we were doing to preview this game, that Justin Herbert was going to go 18 of 32 for 202 yards, We all would have looked at each other and say, what's the final score? Washington win by 10 or 14?
Probably, yeah, right? Washington winning either
way. You wouldn't have given Oregon a chance to win the game.
Right.
The fact that they were able to do it when it was perceived that Washington was better talent-wise top to bottom on that roster, that's what stands out the most to me. And I think you're spot on the message that Cristobal was trying to send on the new identity of the program. You're going to hear that word a million times this week, the new identity of Oregon football. In the past, Oregon, when they would get in slow, physical, grind-out games, they would lose. They would find a way to lose these kind of games. They found a way to win this one with their toughness, with their physicality, and new Oregon football is a ton of fun to watch.
Well, and look, ultimately, as we're going to dive into this real heavy today, because I think everybody's watching that game, whether you're a Duck, Washington fan, doesn't matter to me. I think everybody just wanted a good football, and we got a good football game. We really did. Physical, you got defense, you got a mix of offense. The officiating from the Pac-12, of course, lived up to the billing of what they are, and that's something we can talk about later. That game ultimately really is a coin flip game. Washington kicker makes a kick. Guess what? The Huskies win a three-point ball game. That could have gone either way. And the one thing I liked, it will not always work out in your favor, but the one thing I noticed was throughout that game, Cristobal on fourth downs said, no, 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 man. Or no, 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 brother. We're not settling for a field goal here. We're going to get this fourth down. We are going to be the aggressor here. We are not backing down to a team that is really physical and has really kind of not dominated, but done a great job within this conference the last 3-4 years. And I loved that approach. Now you flip that, and I know he's in a tremendous head coach. I still hold him in the highest esteem in this conference. Chris Peterson got a little conservative at the end there. I thought he killed too much time. I know the kid missed the kick, and it wasn't about distance. It was more just he hooked it.
Well, and it was a windy day at Autzen. Like, you couldn't tell from at home.
I think he had the wind at his back.
By the time he kicked it, it was gusting to the right.
To the right,
it was,
okay.
It pushed I don't know if that was the reason it completely missed, but it was blowing in that direction.
Well, he made the two kicks prior to being frozen out with the timeouts. So distance is not necessarily the thing, but as any kicker will tell you, get me closer. Just get me closer. Let me feel more confident. 37 yards is not the end-all, be-all. Like, that's still a makeable kick, and I thought he showed that with the distance. But Chris Peterson could have run a play. Mm-hmm. He could have run two. He had two timeouts. And he was quoted in the postgame, you know, we didn't really like a play in those situations. They didn't know what they wanted to run. And that was baffling to me. That is an uncritical Chris Peterson-like comment. And he's already come out today and says, yes, he wishes he would have called a timeout. He wishes they would have ran another play and got a little closer for his kicker.
Yeah, because it was third and one. So even if you don't get the first down, it's fourth down, you call a timeout, you kick it from there.
You're no worse off. Yeah. And that, to me, stood out heavily because it's not only Mario Cristobal and Marcus Arroyo saying, this is what we're going to do today. It was also a message, I thought, sent to that team of, we're not settling today, man. We are going for it.
We just roll, brother.
Yeah, we just roll, brother. And he was quoted in the postgame.
Lord, are you trying to deafen me?
I don't know if we have the cut. If we do, I'll bring it back to you.
Warn me here, Swigard.
Yeah, these cuts are coming in hot.
Coming in hot.
But, and you heard this in the postgame, if Verdell doesn't score, he said they were going for it on fourth down and overtime. He was not okay settling. And he sent such a message, I thought, to his team on Saturday.
You know it, brother. I love that play call, though, too, in the overtime, because even if you don't get it, you feel good about getting 3 or 4 yards, and you're setting yourself up for a fourth and manageable. I want to say it's 3rd and 5 in that situation. And, you know, the Washington decision to kick it from there, we all were kind of looking at each other like, what? Is the clock, is nobody calling? Because Oregon still had timeouts left. Washington, nobody was calling it. It was like a stalemate of maybe the other team thought the other team was going to call a timeout. And I think for Washington fan, you're really frustrated with that one of not giving him another opportunity there just to try and push it. The aggressive nature for Oregon, too, is also a byproduct, I think, a little bit of zero confidence in the kicking game. Like, Husky fan is going to scream from the mountaintop, if we make a kick, we win that game.
Right.
Sure, Oregon also missed a kick in the fourth quarter by a lot wider margin, but they shanked the hell out of a kick basically the same distance earlier on in that quarter for a chance to take a 27-24 lead. And if that kid makes it, then at the end of the game, you're kicking for a chance to tie and go to overtime. So each team, it really was, when you go up and down the box score, I don't know if I've ever seen a game. It was like almost identical. I mean, Washington a little bit of an edge in yards, but Oregon an edge in first downs. Time of possession was even.
Right.
Both teams had one turnover. Both teams missed a field goal. It was up and down as even of a game as you could have asked for, and that's what made it such a classic finish. And when you take the rivalry angle away from it, I think an unbiased observer at that one would say, it's unfortunate one of these teams has to lose.
Right.
Because neither team really did anything to lose that football game. It just came down to Oregon getting the goal line stand in overtime and Washington not able to do so.
All right, we'll dive more into this game. What did you make of Oregon's performance against Washington? 55305 is the Better You Today text line. You can give us your thoughts there. We'll dive more into it next. You got Dirt and Sprague live from the 1080 The Fan Broom Closet here on Portland Sports Leader. All right, welcome back in. 12:19 on The Fan. Dirt and Sprague with you this Monday afternoon. We're talking Oregon and Washington as the Ducks get the win against the Huskies. Swag, if we can, let's cue up the kick here by Washington. Peyton Henry, the field goal kicker for Washington, which, by the way, I know we're a very degenerate show. I won a side bet on that kick. I turned to my buddy, who's a Duck fan, and he's like, oh, God, I'm going to lose. And
I go, dude, over.
I go, this guy's going to miss. And he made the two kicks before the timeout.
He missed the first one.
Oh, I thought he made the first one.
Yeah, so the first timeout he missed.
Because I didn't see it on TV. People were like, yeah, he made it.
Yeah, that was the one. Because everybody in the stadium gasped because he missed it and you called timeout.
Right.
It was like, oh, God, no, you missed your chance
here. But he made the second one.
He made the second one.
And I turned to him, I go, he is a 70% kicker. Do you know how bad that is? Just for NFL standards, you're 70% kicker. You're getting cut on Monday. And I go, I bet you he is going to miss this kick. And he stupidly bet me, which was weird because he's a Duck fan. And then, of course, he shanked it, and the place I was watching went absolutely bananas. But here's the call from Jerry Allen.
This is it. 37-yard try. No more timeouts. This is for real. Snap. Good. Place good. Kick up long enough. He missed it. He missed it. How did he miss it?
Yeah, and then here's the C.J. Verdell overtime game-winning touchdown run. As they were about 5 yards out, he goes untouched.
If Oregon scores a touchdown, game over, Oregon wins. If they don't score the touchdown, they need a field goal to force the second overtime. Schuler goes left. Red inside of him. Mitchell short right side of the field. Herbert. Verdell behind him. Snap. Give it to Verdell. Up the middle. Touchdown! Verdell right up the middle. Untouched. Oregon has beaten Washington. The Ducks have beaten the Huskies.
So Jerry Allen clearly happy, as heard here on The Fan. I did notice that Cristobal said that he noticed they were dropping eight on defense, so that's why they called timeout and changed it, because they were going to pass. That's another thing that surprised me. Again, Chris Peterson is an amazing coach, and this is a coin flip game. But something like that, I'm surprised Peterson maybe wasn't talking with his defensive guy, Jimmy Lake, and maybe they were saying, they call a timeout, maybe they're going to run here. They dropped eight again after the timeout, and I mean, that was as easy a touchdown run as you're going to get.
Yeah, and it was through, I think it's important to note, the backup offensive lineman. That was the crazy part about it, is they ran right through the new right guard and right tackle, and C.J. Verdell a couple of weeks ago, hell, he wasn't even a starter for this Oregon team. So that was kind of a cool moment of showing the depth that you have, and to be able to identify something like that, I thought was a huge find by Cristobal, because when you're that close in, and he talked about this in the postgame, when you're that close in at the 5 or 6 yard line, whatever it was, there's not a lot of windows, and Washington's strength is their secondary. That is a dynamic group. They showed it all afternoon. It was hard for any Oregon wide receiver to find separation. There was the play in the back of the end zone towards the end of the first half that he had Dylan Mitchell, and the guy reached out and knocked it away at the last second.
That was a good play.
It's a great secondary back there, and I think for Washington, it was almost a pick your poison. Do we want to stack the box and try and dare Herbert to throw a slant or a fade or something, a quick route, and maybe give up a touchdown? Or do we trust our guys up front with the banged up offensive line? And they decided not to go back on that. And to be able to sprint down the sideline, because Oregon was throwing the football. When you go back and watch, when they called timeout, Herbert hiked it and
he
stood
was going to throw.
He was going to throw the ball. And they got the timeout in and they said, if we get this same look, let's run the football. And it was a gaping wide hole.
Right. You know, this is a good thought here at the Better You Today text line. Fellas, painful day to be a P1 in Portland as a Dogs fan, but I'm taking it like a man.
As you should.
That's part of the rivalry, right?
Oregon got outscored the last 2 years of this, by the way. What, 80 points, 100-20? I don't know what the hell it was, but it was terrible. It was hard to go through.
It wasn't remotely close. I do want to, because it was something else I noticed during the defensive line. Again, I thought Oregon really did win the line battles. I'm not telling you it was a huge margin. At one point, it felt like it did, but I thought Washington, especially in that second half in the fourth quarter, they started to get more pressure on Herbert. They started to send more guys at him and make life a little more difficult, get a couple three and outs. I did think overall Oregon won the battle in the trenches on both sides. But the thing I was most surprised about from a on-the-field standpoint was the weakness of this team was a secondary for Oregon. And I noted this, and the reason I picked Washington was I know Jake Browning's not amazing. I also know he's not as terrible as people made him seem. It's funny, he threw the pick on the second play of the game.
That was a great way to start
the game.
I was
like, oh, here we go.
Yeah.
He ended up having an okay day.
Yeah, he did.
But I do believe the secondary for Oregon really played extremely well, given what people were saying about them going into that. And barring a kind of tripping over your own feet, losing the ball a little bit in the moment when they got that long touchdown pass.
Yeah.
I thought the secondary played a hell of a ball game for Oregon.
Yeah, I mean, you go back and look at a lot of their big pass plays and gains through the air. It was either finding the tight end in the middle of the field, and that's something that Oregon struggled with all year, going all the way back to like Portland State and San Jose State. I mean, teams have taken advantage of that. Stanford did as well. They need to figure out a way to better cover the tight ends, because Sample had a bunch of big plays. One of them was on a trick play. But the rest of their pass plays and completions that they made, it was broken plays. It was Jake Browning extending, scrambling around, The long touchdown, of course, it tied it at 24. That's what happened on that play, was him sclamming around and Graham was left out on an island and couldn't get his head turned around in time to make a play in the end zone. That was their passing game, and I'm with you. I thought they played pretty well. And, you know, Jake Browning, I get why he would be frustrating if he was the quarterback of your program, especially when you have the expectations that Washington does. He has head-scratching moments from time to time. But sorry to use a cliche, he's a gamer.
He settled in after that first couple possessions.
He threw the pick on the second play, whatever it was. But after that, I mean, you leave impressed with his toughness. I mean, that guy, just being down there on the field, he took some huge hits. He was getting beat up.
Well, when he threw the pick, he got lit up. I thought that was going to be a roughing the passer call for a second.
How many times did he scramble and pick up a first down? It felt like on a third and four, just a backbreaker. You're thinking you're going to get off the field. And then, as I mentioned, in a lot of those pass plays were him extending it. And if you don't have a mobile quarterback that can move, feel the pressure, escape, Washington couldn't have done anything in the passing game. It was all him scrambling around and making plays. So he's not the strongest guy. He's not the biggest guy. He's not the best quarterback in the country. But his ability to just kind of to scramble around and feel out a game, I was really impressed by.
Well, you know what he's really good at? Because we know he's somewhat mobile. And as you mentioned, I thought just his ability of maneuvering within the pocket. You know, he was doing all kind of zigzagging around because the offensive linemen were just coming from the middle, from the side. And I thought he did a pretty good job of recognizing. He had a couple plays that, and these are just a couple, but they stick with you. You know, head-scratching sacks that he was taking. Get rid of the ball.
Right.
He has those moments. And that's just kind of who he is. But I'm with you, man. He really showed up after he threw that pick. They kind of settled in. He threw some good passes. I don't think ultimately he cost you the game. I really don't.
No.
I thought, and you could even make a point. I didn't see what the final was in terms of how much he threw versus Herbert.
It was 243 to 202.
Well, how many times did they pass? Excuse me.
25. Washington threw it 25 times. Oregon threw it 32 times.
See, and I just, you know, it's not like the biggest deal in the world. I thought Browning kind of outplayed him a little bit in the second half. He put Washington in that position. So
he had that drive at the end of the game. I mean, there were some big plays on that drive.
Right.
They had the miracle screen to open it up.
Weren't they at their own 8 on that last drive about 8 or 10 yard line?
And I think the first play of the drive was the screen that could have been picked off by like two different guys, and that little white back, what was his name? McGrew, I think, snuck behind the Oregon secondary.
He was a good third string running back, by the way.
They have a ton of depth at the running back position.
Yeah, they do.
That was a major standout. So he put him in position to win. That's not on Browning. The pick was bad. The sacks were a couple of bad ones, but for the most part, he kept him in that game. I thought you saw in the second half, and Crystal Ball noted this in the post game, they kept their offensive philosophy the same throughout because they felt like eventually they would be able to wear Washington down. And in the first half, Oregon, I want to say, only had about 140 or 150 total yards of offense. There wasn't really much until that late touchdown to Jalen Redd at the end of the
half.
Which,
how big was that to go in tie?
It was a huge swing play to go in 17-17, and then they got the ball first, but they didn't take advantage of it out of the half. But they wanted to wear him down. But the other part of it was, and this was something that you don't think about in the moment, but when Carl Berg got ejected at the end of the first quarter, that, speaking of depth, Oregon doesn't have a lot of depth on the defensive line, especially in the middle. You feel great about Scott, Folau, Gary Baker's played a little bit, but there's not a ton of bodies that you feel like you can rotate in and out. So you take away one of their best interior defensive linemen, you realize you got to play three quarters now without him. That was something that I think, I don't know if the game plan would have been the same with him or without him, but they realized time of possession was going to be big for them because Washington can beat you up front. They averaged about 4.5 yards per carry, so they ran the ball at a decent clip. You didn't have one guy go off, but as a team, they had a .194, and they wanted to make sure that was a group that didn't get worn down, and I thought that was big because when you look at time of possession, the only team coming into that game that beat Washington this year was Auburn.
And right.
Washington ended up, it was 30 minutes to 29 minutes, so they edged them by barely over a minute. But I thought that was big just to control the clock, make sure your group's staying fresh, and it enabled the Oregon defense to come up with some big stops late in the game.
All right, we'll get to your thoughts. What do you guys think about that football game? What do you think about the future of Oregon now? A lot of people obviously jumping to the what this means for Mario Cristobal. They had the number one overall player in the draft, in the recruiting class, I should say, draft class, recruiting class. He was in attendance. He sent out some tweets this morning, maybe hinting at Oregon being the favorite right now. How do you feel? We'll use the Texas cliches. Oregon back. 55305 is Better You Today text line. We'll hear from Mario Cristobal as well. And then maybe dive into the matchup coming up this weekend with the Cougars, who are going to be hosting College Game Day for the first time. That's next. All right, welcome back in. Dirt and Sprague with you. We are live in the 1080 The Fan Broom Closet today. Got to make the studio sexy again.
I apologize, too, because I don't know what I ate, but I'm a little gassy.
I know what you ate. Yeah. It was shrimp pasta. I can taste it on my tongue.
That was the first memo.
And I don't like shrimp pasta.
The first memo from the boss when we came to take a tour of the new studio was no passing gas in here, and I literally sat in here for like 30 seconds and then farted and then realized what I did. Then I left, and I felt ashamed. So I promise next time I'll walk to the hallway, buddy. I won't do that to you again.
Yeah, I would appreciate if that didn't happen. But you know what? Unlike my great-grandparents, God rest their souls, they bought their house in like 1971, and they never remodeled anything. They kept the carpet, they kept the wood paneling walls. They didn't change anything from when they bought that house to when they died in that house.
Just keep it the same.
I'm glad that we're changing it up a little bit. We're making this right. The studio sexy. I'm gonna feel like, oh, this should be on HGTV.
When you go down a notch, it makes you appreciate the nice things that you have. And when we're back in a nice studio with a nice soundboard, all that stuff, it's gonna be like, man, we shouldn't make fun of the bad internet in here anymore.
By the way, a glimpse into my life. The studio is my wife's closet. This is my closet. This is at home. No, really, that's the size difference.
You get one little quarter.
She gets to walk in, you get the side closet, okay? You make it work. Well, we're talking Oregon, Washington, and like I tend to believe personally, we jump way ahead when good things happen to our teams. I don't care who you root for. When something great happens, we tend to get a little over our skis. Case in point, my Oregon State Beavers, when they won 4 games under Gary Anderson, won the Civil War, everybody and their mom thought Oregon State was going to get back to a bowl team, respectability within the conference. Boom. The guy quits like 4 games into the next season, and here you are trying to rebuild this yet again with a different coach. So I don't think Oregon's any different from any other fan base in this regard. But about the future of Oregon, they're top 5 in recruiting right now. They seem right now to be really in a strong foothold for the number 1 overall player in the upcoming recruiting class.
Yeah, I saw him on the sideline. That dude is a monster.
He's the number 1 prospect, and he's an incredible defensive end coming out of high school. The future of Oregon now, after beating Washington, seems to be the talking point. Is Oregon back? How do you feel about it?
I think I would have had a different answer for you if Oregon had won the game the way that I thought they were going to win the game. Look, Oregon benefited from this one, and it's the reason I picked Oregon last week, even though some people called me a homer. Now they're using it as an excuse this week. Washington was banged up. They had to go on the road back-to-back weeks, and Oregon was coming off a bye. That is a huge advantage for any football team. The numbers in the last 5 or 6 years in this conference, when you look at teams that are going on the road back-to-back weeks, they're not great. A lot of times you lose on that second one. It's just attrition and it happens. So I think you need to remember that. That's a part of this equation. But the reason why I'm more optimistic about the quote-unquote back conversation than I thought I was going to be is I thought Oregon was going to win this game on the arm of Justin Herbert. I thought he was going to – you look at what he did against Stanford, 25 of 27 in regulation, just dominant. And I know he had the pick at the end, but just throwing dimes all over the field.
That was a fourth down play. Sure, throwing the end zone.
Throwing dimes all over the field, leaving the offense up and down, scoring points on their first 4 drives. He was the reason for it. And I thought that's why Oregon was going to win this game. And that wasn't the case. Herbert made some big plays. The 3rd-and-11 in overtime, the touchdown at the end of the half to Red, one of his many connections to Dylan Mitchell throughout the course of the game. He made some big plays that helped him win that game. But you can't sit here today and say they won that game because of Justin Herbert. And I think when you're having the conversation about where this football team is as a collective group, I'm actually more optimistic today than I was on Friday, because you were able to control the line of scrimmage. You maybe had the best skill position player in the game in Dylan Mitchell with the way he's gone the last 3 weeks. Defensively, you played a lot better than I thought you could, especially in the back end. And you couple all of that with there being, at least in my mind, no questions about the coaching staff, the game plans they're putting together, because so far it's been pretty darn good. And then you add on top of it the way this staff is recruiting. I don't know how you're anything but thrilled about the direction this program is going.
Well, I think one thing that stood out in the post game, because I did the post game show, was Shane Lemieux, their offensive lineman, was asked after the game if he thought Oregon was ahead of schedule with Mario Cristobal. Here's his answer.
I mean, obviously, as a first-year head coach, it's kind of, you know, rebuilding. Everyone wants to say that, but we knew that we had a Heisman, you know, quarterback. We had a really good offensive line. We had a, you know, just good defense, everything around, good defensive coordinator. So we knew that we were well-equipped to win this year and win a lot of games. I don't think necessarily like as much as we are now. You know what I mean? The first kind of the game, we were like, okay, like, we got a good team. We got a good quarterback. We're really meshing well. But now that we're really rolling, I think that we're just getting started.
Yeah, so he just thinks they're getting started. Maybe they are ahead of schedule. I don't know what everybody out there had them pegged at. We did a poll question yet again on this at Dirt and Sprague. You know, Oregon gets the win. Where do you have them? Last I checked, I think most people still said about 9-3. And they have a big game this weekend, and we're going to get into that as well, as Washington State's going to have College Game Day there for the first time. But I don't know. Maybe 9 wins is about what most people thought. 10-2. I had heard a couple people say they could be 10-2 because of the 3 non-conference wins. So I don't know how people are going to view this. I think when you beat a rival, though, especially a rival, as you pointed out, outscored you like 100 and something to a tiny number. When you beat a rival, a team you really don't like, I think it changes the perception of a number. So if I would have said, oh, Oregon's 9-3 this year, but I added Washington in that, you beat Washington, I think you're more excited versus if you lose to Washington.
Right, you lose to Stanford and Washington, and then you go 9-3.
Sure, it changes a lot of people's perceptions about the program. The one thing I would ease up on, the back conversation, that's going to get sorted out in the next year or two. The one thing I would ease up on, I do think the conference is clearly down a little bit this year. I thought Oregon was tremendous against Washington in the trenches, which surprised me a little bit watching that football game. But right now, this conference is not showing a whole hell of a lot. Like we're going to dive into the Oregon-Washington State game. On a scale of 1 to 10, how much would it shock you if the Cougars beat Oregon?
No, it wouldn't shock me at all.
So I think that is ultimately where I fall. Are they back? Maybe. But we can't say that quite yet. If Herbert leaves, you also want to see what the next quarterback's going to be like. There's a lot of unknowns right now, and the conference not being the greatest. I think you just take the win for what it was, and you hope to God you get out of Pullman with a win, and then you see where you're at if you can maybe have a Rose Bowl type season. Don't get ahead of yourself and start proclaiming your program's back. Just worry about this year and let everything else take care of itself.
Well, I mean, the main thing to remember is you can't answer the question to are they back yet, but you can answer the question to are they on their way back? And the answer to that is yes. Just when you look at the direction that things are going, you are a couple of fluky plays against Stanford away from sitting here right now 6-0 and ranked in the top 10 in the country and firmly in the college football playoff conversation. That's where your season has gone. And if I told people that in August, they would laugh. Oregon's going to start 6-0 and be in that position. You would have laughed at that notion. Maybe they have a good year. Maybe they get to 9 wins, but they're not that good. And here they are, a crazy fumble and a late fumble away from beating Stanford and Washington. So are they back? I don't know. I said it last week, and I firmly believe it, that this conference is wide open. Phil Steele said on our show last Tuesday, if Oregon wins this game, they win the North. I'm not ready to go there yet. I'm not. I think what Oregon's win did was it opened it up for everybody. Washington's got one loss. Stanford's got one loss. Oregon's got one loss. And Washington State has one loss. And now they get to go duke it out. The other three that I mentioned haven't even played each other. Stanford, Washington, and Washington State haven't even played each other yet. So this thing to me is wide open. So the question of back right now, no, give it a couple of weeks. But I think the question you wanted to be able to answer is, do you feel confident about the direction that this is going? Do you feel good about the coaching staff? Are there concerns about the play calling? Are they able to recruit much better than what Mark Helfrich did? And when you go down the line and check all of those boxes, Oregon fan is feeling great. And if you could couple this win with a 9 or 10 win season and then add on top a potential top 5 recruiting class in the country, that's where the answer comes. Yes, they are on their way back.
All right, well, they head to... All right, there we go. They head to Pullman, Washington this week and get ready for the Cougars, who are coming off a bye. Game day announced they are finally going to go to Pullman. We'll talk about that matchup and hear what Mario Cristobal has to say and read a few thoughts at the Better You Today text line of 55305. Back with more on The Fan. All right, 12:49 on The Fan. We got our NFL whip around. We'll go to the National Football League coming up. We will get to the rest of the Pac-12 weekend that was. How about Chip getting a win? That made me sad. I really wanted a winless coach and an undefeated coach.
Yeah, the Huskies still stand alone, 0-12, baby. The number is still yours. Rough weekend for Washington.
Do the 0-7 Huskies pop champagne the way the Dolphins do? Or
I think it's popping something other than champagne, but there might be some sort of celebration of it.
Yeah, so we'll get to that. We will talk about the ALCS. I'd like to dive into a little baseball stuff, if you would indulge me. I thought game one was really good. The Astros blew out, what was that, the 8th inning? They came up and they just couldn't be stopped. And then game two, Boston gets a little bit of revenge. And then, of course, LA, with Justin Turner's help, they tie the series against Milwaukee. So we got 1-1 series heading back to the other city. So we may dive into that as well a little bit later on. You did miss the post game. I had a listener specifically text me the entire post game how much he hated me.
Yeah, what's up with that?
I don't know, because I actually thought I was really good the post game. I thought it was our best post game show so far this year.
You didn't just honk it up about the Beavers for 2 hours, you Beaver Homer.
Please don't ever say that again.
Okay, sorry.
I've heard that before, and it quite upset me. No, I was actually pretty complimentary of Oregon throughout the show.
Well, you know, they won. I don't know how you're...
Yeah, I had good energy. I played all the cuts.
All right.
We teed it up well. We got drunk dirt on the phone. It was perfect.
Hey, I was not drunk. I was mildly tipsy, okay?
I'm pretty sure, by the way, Anthony Newman cried.
Yeah, he texted me yesterday. It was a thing, man. I usually am very composed in media settings. You know, I don't allow myself to cheer. You know, it's all internal for me.
But you're on the sideline. You can get away with it.
That's what I was thinking, too, because when that kick missed, I let out a very loud yelp. And then when the touchdown happened, it was pandemonium, man. Like, walking out onto the field after that game, not quite realizing, like, I didn't know that you were still allowed to rush the field. I thought that was, like, a thing that was, like, outlawed in college sports.
No, you can, but you get fined if you do certain things.
Okay, yeah, because all of a sudden I'm like out there and I'm just trying to soak in and realize that they had just won the game, and the next thing I know, right, I am swarmed by thousands of people. And then Dusty was going up the other way in insider radio terminology, but he was going to interview Chris Peterson, and he already had his microphone, but he forgot a cord.
Oh.
So he called me, and of course I can't hear him, and right, but he texted me and said, so I had to like swim through 5,000, 10,000 people.
A lot of bros down there on the field.
A lot of bros. Elbows flying all over the place to find him, and then I gave him the cord, and then I had to go back the other direction.
Yeah, it was chaos and madness, but it was a lot of happiness down in Eugene on Saturday. All right, now they head to Pullman, and I just want to point this out. Game day is going to Pullman for the first time, so congratulations, Cougar fans.
Also, a very humble, you're welcome, Coug fan.
Okay, I'll give you that. Yeah,
you're going to take credit for that.
If Oregon loses to Washington, they're not going to Pullman.
If Oregon doesn't win, they're not going to Pullman.
And as 1P1 did point out, both Corvallis and Pullman can now thank Oregon for college game day.
We didn't need to bring up 2010. All
I'm
right?
feeling very confident today. I'm sorry.
You're being quite an a-hole. You're wearing your Oregon headphones today.
I'm sorry.
No, what I would say about that, one, sincere congratulations, because I know everybody in Pullman has wanted it. You guys have deserved it. You showed up and been the best fan base for game day in its 21 years of existence. The funny thing about this, they could have done this so many times.
I actually heard you bring that up on the postgame show.
They have chosen to blackball you until this weekend. They've been to FCS schools. They've been Division III schools. They have been to places that don't deserve game day over you. And I love that now they're getting all this credit for going to Pullman. They could have gone to Pullman 85 different times right, since they've existed. Right. They have chosen not right, to, but this weekend schedule kind of sucks, and Oregon getting that big
and
win is perfect.
The 15th anniversary of the first time Old Crimson flew at College Game Day.
There you go. I don't think they cared about that anniversary. I think
they did. Did you see the tweet?
No, I'm saying if Oregon loses, they're not going to Pullman.
No.
So I don't think they care about the anniversary.
No, because that would have been like, no, Oregon would have been ranked like, what, 20th or 21st versus 25?
Right.
This is a big game now. I mean, both teams are basically in control of their own destiny in the Pac-12 North if they went out the rest of the way. So this is a huge game. I'm with you. I was cracking up because I was listening to the postgame on my way home, and you brought that up, and it's such a good point. Like, game day always does this, like, condescending, we'd love to get there, but
never been the right time.
It's like, no, you can pick, you are in control. You can pick any game that you want to go to every single weekend. Washington State has had good years. I believe 3 straight years of 9 wins. They've had some solid seasons, and every single year you have decided not to go. They are going to run out of alcohol in Pullman. This is going to be like Woodstock and Mardi Gras and Super Bowl week all packed into one.
Who was it that Syracuse sold out of alcohol for? Who was that? That fan base. This just happened like a year or two ago.
Who was that?
You remember that Syracuse had to shut their bars down because those fans drank all
the
alcohol.
Somebody went and drank all the booze.
All the fans showed up from that school. I forget who it was. Text Police can help with this one. And the bars had to shut down because they drank all the booze in Syracuse.
Was it Washington State?
No.
They didn't play Syracuse.
They didn't play at Syracuse. It wasn't Washington State.
It's a program like that, though.
Yeah, but I think it's a slightly more successful, legendary program than Washington State.
Yeah.
But they showed up, and they boozed the hell out of it. Here's Mario Cristobal. Let's get to this because I do want to get your thoughts. We're running against the clock here. Oregon taking on Washington State. Here's Mario Cristobal's thoughts initially of Washington State.
In this conference and the way football is structured now, every single week is a playoff game. Every single one. And we're playing a team that is red hot, doing a great job with a bye week to prepare for us. And I have watched this game on TV, so we've got to quickly see our family, spend some time with them, eat some good food, enjoy this for a very, very little bit. We got to take care of our bodies, and we got to prepare for a great opponent next week and continue going forward, okay? We're 5-1 at the midpoint of the season. There is progress. We had way too many penalties today.
I did love his, we've got to eat good meals, we've got to take care of our bodies.
Isn't that great?
I didn't like that.
He had a funny line, too.
He's very Hulk Hogan. Take your vitamins.
Like, talking about the intensity of the season, he had a. I laughed out loud when he said it, but he had a line saying, it's only week 6. And I was like, yeah, you still got 6 more of these things to go, man. You got to buckle up and do it again next weekend. It really is. I'll say this, and one of the listeners brought it up. I think it's a good point that the fear of a letdown to me goes away a little bit because of game day being there, actually.
Do you think that changes things for them?
I don't know if it changes things. I still think it's going to be a great matchup. You know, it's going to be, I don't know what the over-under is going to take, but I'll take the over of what it's going to be.
By the way, they hit exactly on the number of the over-under.
Did they in the Oregon Washington
57.
Game. The weak part of the Oregon defense is their secondary, and we know how Washington State can sling the ball. And the weak part of the Washington State football team is their defense. And I think Oregon's going to be able to move it up and down the field on them. So I'm expecting quite a shootout and a fun game. But when you have an atmosphere like that, a big game like that, College game day being there, and the fact that they've already proven earlier this year that emotionally they can flush what happened and moved on, like they did after losing to Stanford, which was a gut punch, and then moving on to Cal. The fear of a letdown does go out the window a little bit for me.
Thank you, Text Police, by the way. It was LSU.
LSU,
it was
that's
LSU.
Right.
They
that's
drank right. them out of Syracuse. We'll have more on that game throughout the week. Of course, we got Mario Cristobal tomorrow, and I'm sure we will revisit the Washington State angle because he's had 24 hours, and we know, you know, he's a hard worker. He's already watched several hours of tape. So we'll dive into that some more. But coming up next, we got a loaded second hour. We'll get to the LCS matchups. What the hell is John Gruden doing? We'll talk about that great Sunday night football game. But coming up next, the NFL whip around. We do it every Monday at 1. That is next on Portland Sports Leader 1080 The Fan.
All right, football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week 1? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.